We've learned quite a few things from Ecclesiastes, from Solomon, writing about his search under the sun. We've learned that there's really no meaning in life apart from God. Away from God, nothing makes sense. God has a plan. There's a time for everything, and a season for everything, he said. Then God's plan is good. God's plan is clear. God's program is sometimes mysterious, and that gives us a good chance to trust God. And last week, he gave us some advice on what we should do. This is what we should do. He says, there's a problem of faulty justice. There's a problem of fierce opposition, financial rivalry, fractured relationships, and fickle popularity. Today, Solomon is going to give us some more advice, but this time it's going to be on what we should not do. Last week, what we should do. Now, what we should not do. We face adversity. Let's face it, there are things in our lives that are problems, and they come, sometimes they're worse than other times. And we have to face them, and things like terrorists. Did it run through your mind last week that when we had that blackout, uh-oh, who did that, you know? And I think they still don't know. They know they're not telling us all the details, but who knows? It could have been, and one day it may be. One day you may go to your doctor and he said, well, you've had a good long life, not much longer, you know. It can happen. The economy. The bottom could drop out tomorrow. It may have dropped out last week. I don't know. It seems to be dropping somewhere. That can be a problem as well. A hurricane. Maybe a hurricane come through here worse than anything we've ever had. You know? We've experienced some. Last year, Wilma. All those things. But here are some things that we should not do when those things happen. When we face problems, here are some things that we should not do. First of all, we should not blame God. Can you imagine blaming God? He says, when you come into the house, when you come into God's house, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Why when you go to the house of God? Well, because there you are talking more closely with God. But I think maybe he's not saying just when you go to the house of God, whenever you communicate with God. Whenever you go into the house of God, go near to listen rather than to offer sacrifice of fools who do not know what they do wrong. So we need to come and listen. He says, guard your steps. Really, keep your foot or watch your step. Did you ever hear that somebody tell you that? Watch your step. You know, it's a slippery floor. It's this or that. Watch your step. And he's saying, watch your step. Don't offer the sacrifice of fools. That is, don't offer a promise to God without obedience, with exact obedience. Be ready to hear rather than to talk. This is the time when we hear. We've heard through the ministry of the music that we've heard from God some very fine hymns. Be ready to hear. God gave you two ears and one mouth. What do you suppose he was telling us there? You know? Well, listen at least twice as much as you talk. You know? Because we are supposed to listen. Don't bring your own agenda into the house of worship. Don't come in here and say, I'm mad at God. No. Don't bring your own agenda in. Because he says obedience is better than sacrifice. And that idea of obedience and sacrifice comes to really to mind when you think about Samuel, when you think of Saul, who was anointed by Samuel, and Saul was told by God, go and kill all of the Amalekites. The Amalekites had chased Israel all through the wilderness. They were a problem from the very beginning, that whole 40 years in the wilderness, and they had been ever since. So now, 500 years later, God says to Saul, go kill the Amalekites. Everything they have. Wipe them all out. Everything's gone. That's what I want you to do. Well, Saul did that, and he came back. When he came back, he brought King Agag with him. supposed to kill them all. Oh, no, let's save the king. So he met Samuel, and Samuel said to him, have you done what God said? Yep, I did it all. I wiped them out. Well, don't I hear the bleating of sheep? What happened there? Oh, we saved some of them. They're good for sacrifice. See? You didn't kill Agag? Later on, Samuel says, bring me a sword. And he hacked him to pieces right there. This is what you should do. That's what you're supposed to be doing. But then he said, you have brought animals back in disobedience to God, and you're going to offer them to sacrifice to God? Behold, obedience is better than sacrifice. That's the whole thing. When we come, listen to God. When you walk into church, walk carefully when you come to church. Listen to God. Then he says, talk cautiously to him. Don't be rash with your mouth, verses 2 and 3 say. Let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. So when you talk to God, be careful what you say. Watch your mouth. See, watch your step. That's one thing. Watch your mouth comes a little closer to home for me. Because when I would get just a little bit too smart with my mother, she would say, watch your mouth. The next thing was, I'll smack your mouth. She'd do it. Watch your mouth. When you come to talk to God, watch your mouth. Watch what you say. Because God is listening to every word. So the warning is, don't be hasty in word. We instinctively want to blame somebody when something happens. Don't we? Not me. No. Not me. Blame somebody. Blame whoever's nearby. No. I've tried to do this in my own life. I've tried to say, whenever something happens, not your fault, whoever you are around me, it's my fault. You know, I did it. It's my fault. I'm not blaming you. Well, if we don't see anybody else around us, sometimes we want to blame God. Why did God do this? Can we blame God for anything? Is there anything we can blame God for? No. Yeah. I don't like the weather. Of course, today you couldn't complain about this one. But, I don't like it when it rains. I don't like this. I don't like that. When we say that, we're saying, I don't like what God's doing, because God takes care of that. Isn't that what God does? You know? The weatherman, he reports what he thinks is going to happen, but all he's doing is looking at some of the prevailing things and say, this is what will happen, and usually doesn't. But God is the one who determines it. So if I don't like the weather, blame God. If I don't like the way things are going in government, is that God's fault? No, it's not God's fault. But God directs it. Right? So anytime we don't like anything, we get grumbling, we're blaming God. So don't be impulsive in thought. Be careful how you accuse God. Don't accuse him of anything wrong, because he never does anything wrong. Why is that? Well, because he says, God is in heaven and you're on the earth. That's the reason. It's not just that God is up there higher and God's up there bigger. Not that. What he's saying is, God is up there and he can see better. You're down here, you can't see very much. See? God sees everything, you see nothing for the most part. I was in a downtown office, maybe 18, 20 stories, in an office in Fort Lauderdale, waiting for somebody to come in. And they said, wait in here, have a cup of coffee. And so I'm waiting around, looking out the window. And I stood at a corner, and there was a window here and a window here. And I thought, in fact, I had somebody with me, I said to him, you know what? If I saw two big tanker trucks coming together, and they're going to meet at that intersection, and I saw somebody come in here that I didn't want to get into that, and I had the power to do it, I could give him a flat tire. And he would stop there. He wouldn't come to the intersection. And he might say, why did I have to have a flat tire now? You gave me a flat tire. Not knowing that I know everything. See, I know what's going on. I can see that. See? And if he blamed me, he would be wrong because I had his best interest in heart. Well, that's what we do with God. God's up there. God sees everything. God knows where he's going with everything. And he knows what he wants to do in your life. Where he wants you this time next week. See, all of that. Because God sees all things. You see nothing. Someone said, if you could see what God is seeing, then you wouldn't be saying what you're saying. That's it. God is in control. So instead then, let your words be few, filled with integrity, not pretense, marked with reality and not fiction. That's what we should be with God. So don't blame God. Also, don't bribe God. When we get into trouble, we promise anything, right? Here I am. I remember a man, one of my father's friends, fell into the river at home. And he promised all kinds of things. And he told my father about it. And father said, you promise to go to church? You can go to church with me next Sunday. Well, he went for a couple of Sundays. Didn't last. You know, he promised God all kinds of things there in that water. He got out and didn't do it. But he was promising. Get me out of this and I'll be a missionary in Africa. Boy, if all the promises to be missionaries were fulfilled, Africa would be overrun, and Asia and everywhere else be overrun with missionaries because of promises made and not kept. History tells us about a German young man who was walking along in an electrical storm, and lightning struck near him. He said, help! In fact, he said St. Anne. He was talking, help, St. Anne, I will become a monk. You know who that was? The German guy, Martin Luther. And he did become a monk. And he also became minister of God in the Great Reformation. But he promised, and he fulfilled it. So vows are not wrong. They're just dangerous if you don't keep them. So some things about vows. First of all, vows are proper, but not necessary. Now look in Deuteronomy 23. I find in verse 21, when you make a vow to the Lord, to fulfill it. Now, the word I'm after here is the word when. When you make a vow. That means you don't have to, but if you do, when you do, then fulfill it. But then he goes on to say, however, these are his words, however, if you refrain from vowing, if you don't vow, then it would not be sin. If you don't vow, it's okay. But if you do vow, fulfill it. So vows are not improper. They're a proper thing to do. But vows are also to be paid. They're to be paid when it's convenient. That is, he says, you shall be careful to perform what goes out from your lips, just as you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God. Fulfill what you have promised. Fulfill it. When you may say, well, Lord, I'm going to go to church next Sunday. You know, you go to church every Sunday. I'll be to church next Sunday. So you go. You know, that's fine. That's easy. That's convenient. But even when it's inconvenient, I was going to take one verse out of this Psalm 15. But instead, I'm going to read the whole five. They're great. But I need verse 1 and verse 4, so I'll read them all. First of all, he's saying, he starts in Psalm 15, verse 1. Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? What's he saying? He's saying, who can have fellowship with you? Okay? Lord, who can have fellowship with you? And here are the reasons. Here are the requirements for having fellowship with the holy God. Verse 2 says, he who walks uprightly, who works righteousness, and speaks the truth in his heart. Do you hear that? That's how we can have fellowship with God. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against a friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, and he honors those who fear God. Now here's the part I'm after. He who swears in his own to his own hurt and does not change. His own hurt. Oh, he made a vow. I will do this. Oh, man, I didn't. It's not convenient for me to do that. Oh, I wish I hadn't made that vow. Oh, I don't have to do that. Oh, yes, you do. He makes a vow to his hurt. It's going to hurt him to do it, but he does it. See? That's how you have fellowship with God. You don't do that, you don't have fellowship. And then he goes on to say in verse 5, he who does not put out his money to usury, nor does he take a bribe against an innocent, he who does these things shall never be moved. We make a vow, even if it's inconvenient, we do it. And then, this is one I like, verse 6. He says, vows are not to the pastor. You didn't promise me, you promised the Lord. So don't come to me. See, what he's saying is, read the verse. Verse 6. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? Don't say to the messenger of God. Now, the messenger of God with them was the temple. Remember, he said, when you go to the temple that Solomon built, and the man inside there, the messenger of God in there, was the priest. Right? So don't go to the priest and say, I promised God something. I was going to bring two lambs and whatever, and I didn't do it. I can't do it. I don't have them. I promised God, but I can't do it. And say to the priest, now, get me out of this. No. You didn't make the vow to the priest. You made the vow to God. And the same is true of the pastor. Don't come to the pastor and say, I promised God this, but I can't do it. And what do you think? I'm going to say just what the priest would say. You didn't promise me. You promised God. So when you vow a vow, it's not to the pastor. The vows are between you and the Lord. Verse 7 says, the way you do it is fear God. Nor in the multitude of dreams and many words, there is also vanity. In all your dreams and all you're restless about it, you're dreaming and it's crazy thing, and then you're talking all kinds of things. No, all of that, it's all vanity. Fear God. That's what you have to do. You want to talk about a vow, you made a vow, fear God and do it according to His, what you told Him you'd do. So don't take God lightly just because you can't see Him. Oh, God's not here. If I made a promise to you, I'd do it, but God, oh, He's not around. No, don't take God lightly just because you can't see Him. Don't make a vow to God and not do it. Third thing is, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised at the government's response. Is that in here? Is that in the Bible? Don't be afraid of the government. He says, the government will get their hands on your money, or words to that effect. If you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter, for the high official watches over high official and the higher officials over them. Moreover, the profit of the Lord is for all. Even the king is served from the field. So what he's saying is that what you do, the king has to get some of it. That's all. It's a part of the thing. If he's making services for you, he's keeping the enemies away. There's a service that government does, and you have the right, the responsibility to do that. You do your part. But he says government has problems. At very best, government is a problematic thing. Why is human government a problem? Because it's human. That's it. Yeah. Humans are in there. And humans are not nice people sometimes. Did you ever say to yourself, if everybody would do exactly what he's supposed to, no pork in the bills, no self-serving things, just do whatever's good for the people, whatever's right, if everybody would do that, everything's fine. Well, they're human. And they're not going to do that. So he says, don't be surprised, because the government has to have part of your money. And they may get more than they should. Second thing he says is, you can't fight City Hall. One hand washes the other. If you go over the official's head, I'm going to go to your boss, okay? Go to my boss. You know what you're doing? You're going to the guy who told him to do to you what he did. You know? He told him to do it. What is he going to do? So, because that's what he says. One official watches over the other, another watches over the other, and they all are in on this whole thing. You're talking to the one who told him to do what he did, and you have no recourse. You can't fight City Hall. And then, you're still better off than you would be without government, he's saying, because it's necessary. If you don't believe that, go to places where there's anarchy. I see things and I say, man, I couldn't do that. Now, it may seem worse to me sitting here or standing here than it is there. But it looks pretty bad to me, some places. They're just running all over the place, shooting their guns all over. That's crazy. You know? I like my government a lot better than that. And that's what he's saying, that the we're better off with that government than without any government. Yeah. Then finally he says, something can be and should be done about it. First of all, trust God. Don't get all panicky about the government, because the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and the Lord turns it wherever he wants. But God is not frustrated with this whole thing. God is in control. It doesn't sound like it sometimes, but God's in control. And if we just get a hold of that, if I can just get a hold of that, you know, sometimes things get hold of me and I say, oh, boy, I wonder what we're going to do. How can we do it? No. Hey, look what he did to me. He cut me off. He did this. He made me, it cost me some money what he did. You know what? God saw it. And God allowed it. Not just saw it, he allowed it. Everything that comes into your life comes through God first. And that, God allowed it to come. That bad boss, that bad neighbor, whatever it is, God allowed it, see? So trust God. And then pray for the leaders. Pray for these government leaders. Paul says in 1 Timothy 2, therefore I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercession, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, for those who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. So what are you going to do about that government official who cheated you, who made you do whatever to your whatever? You had to get that permit and all that kind of thing. He made you do that. Now, if he was right, then you ought to do it. If he was wrong, you still got to do it. But God's going to take care of that, see? If we ever get that in our minds, life's a piece of cake. Yeah? God takes care of it. Everything. So pray for him. That's what you do. That guy, he did you dirt, but you pray for him. And you pray for all in authority. Do you do that? You pray for President Bush? Do you pray for the mayor, whoever he is? Obviously, I don't pray for him by name. No, pray for the leaders, he says. And then submit yourself to them. 1 Peter 2. Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. You don't do it for him. You do it for the Lord. It's like the man I heard, a sailor didn't like this guy who was the... who's an officer. I'm not going to salute him. And the officer said, wait a minute. You don't like me? That's fine. And he took his coat off with his insignia on it, put it over a fire hydrant, and said, now, salute that fire hydrant. That's what you're saluting. You're saluting that bars on my shoulders. That's what you're saluting. See? So, submit yourself to him because you're doing it for the Lord. Whether the king as supreme or to governors or to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for all the praise of those who do good. Submit yourself to them. And then stand for God. Acts 4. Peter and John were told, you can't preach in the name of Jesus. And they threw them in prison. They beat them and brought them up the next day and said, they had all kinds of problems. They finally sent them out and said, now, go out, but you cannot preach in that name anymore. And Peter says, whether it's right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge. You tell me that I'm supposed to listen to you rather than God? Are you going to do that? No. We cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. We have to do it. Stand for God. Stand for the right thing. So, fourth, don't believe the lies about riches. Don't believe all those things you've heard about riches. For these reasons. First, the more you have, the more you want. He who loves silver, this is verse 10, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This is also vanity. J.D. Rockefeller was asked one time, you know, he's a rich man. They asked him, how much is enough? And he said, just a little bit more. Everybody can say the same thing. How much is enough? How much would be enough for you? Well, a little bit more. That's what I need. Well, the more you have, the more you want. That's the answer. Paul said, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am there to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. What's the next verse? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's how we do it, through Christ. So, the more you have, the more you want. The more you have, the more you spend. He says in verse 11, when goods increase, they increase who eat them. For what profit do the owners have except to see them, that is the goods, with their eyes? What do you mean? When goods increase, they increase who eat them. What he's saying is, the more people, the more money you have, the more people will come around you to get part of it. Someone said, the more loot you have, the more looters come. That's it. The more you have, the more you spend. When possessions increase, parasites show up. Management consultants, tax advisors, accountants, lawyers, household employees, sponging relatives, they're all there because you have money. Then the more you have, the more you worry. The sleep of a laboring man, verse 12, sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich man will not permit him to sleep. We mentioned Rockefeller. At 53, Rockefeller was the only billionaire in the world. But he was 53, the only billionaire, one billionaire in the whole world, that's him. He had an income of $1 million a week. I could live on that. But you know what? He was sick. He ate crackers and milk. He couldn't sleep because he worried about his money. And then he started giving it away. His health improved radically, and he lived to celebrate his 98th birthday. The sick man at 53 became the well man, even to 98. Yeah. Because the more you have, the more you worry. And finally, the more you have, the more you lose. He says in verse 13, there is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt, but those riches perish through misfortune. You can't lose what you don't have, is what he's saying. And when you lose more if you have more. The crash comes and you crash the most. If you trust in your money, you're ready to do a header off some building somewhere. That's it. Because the more you have, the more you lose. If it came today, I would lose, but I wouldn't lose what some people would lose. You know? Well, the more you have, the more you lose. The more you have, the more you leave. He says in verses 14b and 17 to 17, as he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor which he may carry away in his hand. I heard about a rich man died. Someone said, how much did he leave? And the answer was, all of it. He didn't take a thing with him. That's it all. You can't take it with you. And one man told me, if I can't take it with me, I'm not going to go. Well, he went. You can't take it with you. But listen, you can send it on ahead. How about that? Can you send it on ahead? Jesus said, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Right? Now suppose, and I'm trying to think this thing through, and anyway, here it is. You're moving to New York City. You got to go, and you don't know when, but it's going to be soon. You're certainly going to go, but you're not sure when. And the rules are you cannot take anything with you. Nothing. You go as you are. But you can send anything you want ahead, free. Anything you want to send up to New York, to your place, and they're fixing the place up for you. They got a place, you know what it is, but it's going to be nice, because they promise you it's going to be nice. You can send whatever you want, and they'll put it in your place, your mansion, whatever. You can't add anything to it after you get there. You got to live with what you sent over. Well, how much would you send? How much are you going to send with you to New York? Well, what he's saying here is riches are not the solution, and very often they're the problem. Two things you should know about God. First of all, your ability to earn is a gift from God. Here's what he says. Here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all of his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him for his heritage. God allowed you. God allowed you your education. God allowed you the experience, the training that you got for your vocation, so you can earn a living. And it's his gift to you. And without him, you'd still be penniless. God gave it to you. And thank him for it. And, he says in verse 19 to 20, your ability to enjoy that is a gift from God as well. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and to rejoice in his labor, this is a gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly in the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. See, this concept may be a new one. God wants us to enjoy. If we keep working and not enjoying, then we're missing one of God's great pleasures, one of God's great gifts. He wants to give you things for your life, and he wants you to enjoy your life. Don't sit around and say, oh, I can't do anything because I got to work. No, we have to enjoy what God has given. It starts out, of course, with knowing God. And then thanking God, fellowshipping with God, serving God, all of that. That's the way we can enjoy being with God. Now, when you come into God's house, or wherever you communicate with God, don't blame God for your situation. Don't bribe God. Don't be surprised about government around you. Don't believe the lie about riches. When trouble comes, what do? You trust God.